realizing her efforts still weren't childproof enough, she flagged down a waiter and requested plastic utensils and paper plates to replace everything. Mrs. Pfaff suspected that this wouldn't end well, especially since she had a surprise waiting for Mai. And if there was one thing that she knew about her oldest sister, it was that Mai hated surprises more than bad husbands. Mai entered the restaurant, carrying boxes of oranges in her arms. The two sisters locked eyes, nodded in acknowledgement, and Mai shuffled her way over in her signature penny loafers. Her trademark fake Louis Vuitton bag accidentally whacked people on the head along the way. She passed the dark red brocade curtain panels, expertly weaving through the Vietnamese and Chinese women pushing their dim sum carts around, shouting as if they were on the trading floor, calling out to sell steamed plates of shumai, gai lan, congee, chicken feet, and bean curd skin rolls. Mrs. Pham felt shocked by her oldest sister's appearance. Her hair was fully gray. Her face was framed by wisps of silver and white, and her back was slightly hunched forward, as all Asian women's bodies tend to curl when they reach a certain age, like flowers that start to wilt when the air begins to drop. Maybe Mai had become humbler. Maybe she wasn't the same person she had been 10 years ago, the person who blamed them all for how miserable her life turned out. Maybe she had called to make amends and spend the golden years of her life with her family again. Mrs. Pham had hope. "Ming," Mai greeted her as she reached the round table where Mrs. Pham sat and placed the boxes of oranges down. There was an awkward silence where they weren't sure if they should hug it out or not, but both came to the immediate conclusion that that wasn't necessary. It wasn't the Vietnamese way to be awkward, or to hug. Mai pulled out a chair and sat down, taking in Mrs. Pham's appearance, just like she had done before. She swallowed, likely holding back an insult about Mrs. Pham's weight gain, and gestured toward the oranges. "A peace offering."
"You look good,"
Mrs. Pham said sincerely, as she poured some jasmine tea into a paper cup for Mai. She noticed Mai was twirling the jade bracelet on her wrist, and she knew right away that she was nervous. Mai's strange tic started the day they got on that plane from the refugee camps in Malaysia to America. She hadn't stopped fidgeting with her bracelet since. Even though it had been 10 years since they'd spoken, and Mrs. Pham's memory had begun to deteriorate, the unspoken language between sisters never needed to be translated, even if they were always on the brink of war, either with outside forces or with each other. Mai snorted.
"Don't lie to me, Ming. I have a mirror. I know what I look like. I see time hasn't been kind to you either."
"What do you mean? You've always been jealous of me because you know I was born with taut skin,"
Mrs. Pham responded, offended. Her hopefulness in their reunion quickly dissipated. She should have known better than to trust that Mai would be altruistic when she reached out. Suddenly, all bets were off for any immediate truce.
"The only taut thing about you are your purse strings," Mai said roughly, her bullying instincts kicking in. She just couldn't help herself, even after all these years. "Here we go. It's always money, money, money with you, isn't it? Some things always remain steadfast in history, like arrogant men who start wars. And your attitude,"
Mrs. Pham snapped back. Barely 3 minutes into their meeting, and they were ready to enter the ring.
10 years, Ming. Dai ai, Ming ai. It's been 10 years,
Mai said, wagging her finger at her.
"That house belongs to me."
Mrs. Pham threw her hands in the air in defeat. She was never able to handle a fight with Mai. She could hold her ground in these fights, but eventually she was always the first to succumb.
"That was Matt's final decision on the house. That house didn't belong to you. It belonged to—" "Don't you dare say her name in front of me. I can't believe you're still defending our mother and that other woman."
"She's our mother, and that other woman happens to be family by blood, even if you refuse to acknowledge it. What's wrong with you? She suffered enough."
Mai's face quickly lost oxygen. One fat vein began throbbing on the side of her neck. It was Mai's lighthouse warning in a storm. Mrs. Pham immediately recognized these signs and stopped talking. She braced herself against the table, readying herself to hide underneath it, in case the San Andreas Fault, otherwise known as Mrs. Mai Nguyen, would erupt on the scene. Mrs. Pham immediately reached over the table to remove the paper cup full of hot tea.
"Don't you dare lecture me on suffering," Mai began, her eyes almost bulging out of her sockets.
Mrs. Pham suddenly winced, spilling the hot tea all over the table. It cascaded all the way down its lining and onto the carpet, like blood that had been forced from its host. A sharp pain had come over Mrs. Pham's chest, like a knife went through her heart. She tried her best to hide her contorted face from her older sister, but she wasn't strong enough to hide this kind of pain. Her unsteady hands tried to clean up the mess she made, but it only made it worse.
"Ming!"
Mai's voice cried out, her anger quickly subsiding, the vein releasing itself. She ran over to her side, throwing her arm around her.
"What's wrong? Are you okay?"
"I'm fine," Mrs. Pham lied as she tried to straighten back up. "Just a little gassy from last night is all." But she wasn't fine. She'd been having these chest pains for a long time. She had planned on going to the same old Vietnamese herbalist she'd been going to for the last 20 years, but she just couldn't do it. She didn't want to know the truth. What if what was inside of her wasn't curable? But she locked the fear deep inside her mind. She was alive and breathing. That was all that mattered. No need to involve any type of paper trail like health insurance or Western medicine. Mrs. Pham noticed that Mai's arms were still wrapped around her. Mai hadn't shown that kind of physical affection since they were kids.
"What are you doing? It's not like I'm dying or anything."
She wiggled out of her sister's embrace. Mai quickly dropped her arms, straightened up, and smoothed out her linen pants before stiffly sitting down in her chair.
"I know you're not dying. I haven't seen you in 10 years. I don't know what you've been up to. For all I know, you could be recovering from cancer,"
Mai said gruffly, then eyed her up and down.
"Though from the looks of your weight, you probably ate that cancer."
Mrs. Pham got up quickly, despite her chest pain, and grabbed her own fake Louis Vuitton bag off the table.
"I'm leaving. I didn't come here to be insulted. It's clear you're still miserable, 10 years later, and still an insufferable person. No wonder you're all alone. I'm probably the only person who picked up for you when you called."
Mai's face turned a deep red. Mrs. Pham wasn't the type of woman to ever talk back, especially not to her.
"Just sit down, Ming," she said.
Her voice was commanding, but her eyes appeared shifty.
"I didn't come here to argue. I came to catch up."
Before Mrs. Pham could leave, Mai flagged down the woman manning the congee cart, pointing to a bowl of steaming hot rice porridge with specks of dried pork on top. She then signaled to another woman for some gai lan, its garlic sautéed green leaves glistening under the cheap lights. She almost did a defensive tackle, equivalent to a professional NFL player, to stop the next woman in charge of the chicken feet cart. Mrs. Pham eyed her sister suspiciously as she slowly sat back down.
"What are you doing?"
Mai was assembling all the small tin metal steamers in the middle of the table. She spooned some congee into a bowl, drizzling chili oil on top, layering it with gai lan and one chicken foot. She placed it down in front of Mrs. Pham, with the accompanying dark hoisin sauce.
"I'm taking care of you. Am I not allowed to take care of you?"
Mai snapped at her.
"I know how to order food. I know you do."
Still suspicious of her sister, Mrs. Pham ate quietly, observing how strangely Mai was behaving. She must want something. Was she here to take back that house in Santa Ana? Did she need a favor for one of her daughters? Was she dying and here to make amends? After a moment of silence, Mai asked quietly,
"It's not cancer, right?"
Mrs. Pham laughed hoarsely, sputtering congee from her mouth.
"Of course it's not cancer. I've had my back cupped 3 times a week for 20 years. Don't be stupid. I'm invincible. Healthier than I ever have been."
But deep down, Mrs. Pham's worry about what was plaguing her body was growing out of control.
Perhaps it was a message from the Buddha that it was finally her time to leave this world. Her mind immediately went to her one daughter, Joyce, and her fear grew. She decided today was the day to get her affairs in order, finalize her will, write instructions on what photo to use for the funeral. She had to figure out where she had hidden all her jewelry, jade, gold bars, and $20,000 in cash, probably in the nooks and crannies of her house. They were all purposely kept out of sight from her husband, in case there was ever a divorce. The problem was, she had hidden so much over the years, like a squirrel in winter, she hadn't been able to keep track of it all. But her first priority was her daughter, and making sure that she would be taken care of, in this life and in the next.
How is your daughter? How is Joyce?
Dai, your one and only daughter is so far away from you.
Tell Joyce to come back home to Orange County, to take care of you. You're clearly not in good shape,
Mai said as she slurped off the skin on a braised chicken foot.
New York is cold and dangerous. She's probably been mugged 100 times by now. I don't know how Joyce has survived so far, with her liberal arts degrees. She should be dead on the street by now.
Mrs. Pham narrowed her eyes. If she was somehow already on the brink of death, maybe it wouldn't be so bad in comparison to this torture chamber right here.
I tell Joyce there are plenty of curator jobs in Los Angeles, but she won't come back. She's too important in New York City.
Mrs. Pham sat up a bit straighter and cleared her throat, coughing out any rogue rice grain stuck between her teeth. She knew what was about to happen, and she braced herself. She was ready to ram her daughter's accomplishments down Mai's throat. She had to get ahead of her on this one. Though she'd never admit it out loud, she hated how successful her 3 nieces were in comparison to her daughter. She took out her sword from her mind palace and began sharpening it.
Her work is so specialized, you know. Not anyone can do her job. Joyce graduated top of her class in her master's program, got a job immediately in New York, while the rest of her classmates are still struggling to find work.
I mean, what can you do with an anthropology degree?
Not a lot of jobs out there for that,
Mai said with a bit of a smirk on her face. She proceeded to take out her sniper rifle from her mind palace, already loaded for this moment. She'd been waiting 10 years for this fight, and she knew never to bring a knife to a gunfight.
Tell her to go into tech or start her own business. Being an engineer is the new doctor, you know. My Priscilla has lots of connections in tech, or my youngest, Tao, can hire Joyce to help her business. Her business is doing so well. She needs all the help she can get. But too late now to go into the medical field. She needs years of training, like my Twi. Went to the best, USC. You know Twi is John Cho's dermatologist? That's why he's so handsome. He has Twi to thank for his award-winning career. Anyways, tell Joyce to call up her cousins. Anything for the family. Let's not let our squabbling affect their relationship.
Mrs. Pham calmly poured herself another tea. Though she was wounded in the first round, she always knew how to throw steady punches to stay in the fight.
My Joyce has handled the rarest art from around the world. Oldest, most expensive. Her job is important. Archiving all these important things, making sure they are categorized and preserved for all of history, for all of humanity. Not just anyone can do what she does. She's practically God, preserving history for all our future children to see. People need years of training to do her job. Just because it doesn't pay as much as being an engineer, doctor, or businesswoman doesn't mean it's not important.
Mai scoffed and dismissed Mrs. Pham's points with an eye roll.
Joyce labels objects with a Sharpie. How hard can it?
Mai quickly stood up, hitting her knee on the table along the way. Mrs. Pham turned, instantly knowing the cause. Another woman stood across the room. Her thick gray hair was tightly pulled back into a neat bun, piled high up on top of her small frame. Her fake Louis Vuitton bag hung off her arm so casually, it looked like she could have been standing in line at the bank. As Mai tried to steady her shaky legs, Mrs. Pham watched her oldest sister's face turn from ghost white to blood red.
Their youngest sister, Quien, stood before them, now known as Mrs. Quien Lam, the youngest of the Zung sisters, and mother to two daughters, Elaine and Christine Lam. Mrs. Pham felt Mai's dagger eyes. Inviting Quien to show up unannounced, without giving her any warning, she may as well have sided with the North Vietnamese army. Still, she maintained a steady smirk, though on the inside, she was shaking from fear, like a dog's knees right before a thunderstorm. Because as a sword and a sniper rifle, neither of them was a match against a military tank. The restaurant had kicked the three sisters out. The last thing patrons witnessed before the Zung sisters were thrown out, and after a dim sum cart had been overturned, was Mrs. Mai Nguyen being restrained by the elderly waitstaff as she attempted to throw a bowl of congee into her youngest sister's face. As she was being carried out, her voice trailed behind her, and she managed to sputter out, "You got some nerve showing up here after not siding with me. You practically left me for dead." So the three sisters had no choice but to migrate over to the Bang Mi Jiak Ali Bakery on Brookhurst Street. They sat outside under the umbrella tables, drinking cafe soda. Mrs. Nguyen scowled, her boxes of oranges on her lap, while Mrs. Lam angrily jammed her straw in and out of her iced coffee. Though Mrs. Nguyen's reputation for her temper was infamous all over Little Saigon, Mrs. Lum's reputation as the de facto person to consult if anything needed to be done in a discretionary manner was more notorious. She knew how to escape the watchful eyes of the IRS and immigration, and along with her two daughters, was in the import-export trade, especially with smuggling things in and out of Vietnam under TSA's watchful eye. The staff at Jiak Ali Bakery feared Mrs. Lum's wrath and had given them all extra sữa chua, just in case.
"Can we try to be nice, at least for today?" Mrs. Pham, the middle sister, pleaded. "It's been 10 years.
"I can if she can," Mrs. Lum said icily, avoiding her oldest sister's gaze.
"I'll start if she starts," Mrs. Nguyen shot back, also skirting eye contact.
"Can we hurry this up? I have things to tend to with my businesses," Mrs. Lum sniffed. "My coffee business is exploding, you know. I don't have much time for this second little reunion, or whatever we are calling this."
Mrs. Nguyen scoffed. "Your coffee business?
Come now, Quien. Unfortunately, we're family. You can be honest with me. You don't need to cover up what it is you actually do."
"Toi ai, we serve coffee, believe it or not," Mrs. Lum hissed, lowering her voice so no one around them could eavesdrop.
"It just so happens that the uniforms the women wear are different from your regular coffee shops. We're not Starbucks, you know. In fact, we're better. We provide entertainment."
"You don't actually have your daughters work as one of the girls inside, do you?"
Mrs. Pham asked, genuinely curious.
"I'd imagine it's not the most glamorous work, wearing a bikini all day."
"Of course not. They are in charge of operations. They take care of the women inside, make sure they're safe," Mrs. Lum snapped. "Elaine is basically the mini CEO of the coffee business, and Christine runs the nail salons."
"You always had an entrepreneurial spirit. You're willing to take risks no other woman will," Mrs. Pham said admiringly.
"All that cash, untaxed."
Mrs. Nguyen scoffed. "Sure, if you want to earn your money as a criminal."
"Don't you pretend you're above it all. I remember when you used to butcher pigs out in the San Fernando Valley,"
Mrs. Lum sniped.
"At least I'm not a pimp."
"What did you call me?"
Mrs. Lum said, her voice rising.
"Keep your voice down,"
Mrs. Nguyen shouted as she grabbed oranges out from a box and began throwing them at Quien to silence her.
"Don't tell all of Little Saigon that we're related to a pimp."
"I knew you always thought you were better than me," Mrs. Lum shouted, catching the oranges, then lobbing them back.
"Can we all please just calm down?"
Mrs. Pham was hysterical as she watched oranges flying past her. As the calm one, the mediator,
the middle child. This was out of her comfort level.
Oh, shut up! Just focus on your own daughter and less on us. She makes less than my daughters.
Mrs. Nguyen screamed at Mrs. Pham.
What kind of mother allows their daughter to major in anthropology?
Yes, you babied her too much,
Mrs. Lum chimed in as she ducked behind a chair.
Joyce is a bit strange, isn't she?
Mrs. Pham suddenly saw red in a sea of orange. There was no way she couldn't defend her only daughter. If she was already on death's door, she wasn't going to leave this earth without smacking these two around first. She cracked open another orange box and began to throw them at her sisters.
She's just a late bloomer, and I told you her work is important. She's preserving art for the world. I am not a pimp,
Mrs. Lum screamed into the void, haphazardly throwing oranges in any direction, not caring which sister they hit, as long as they hit any sister.
I am a businesswoman. Don't waste all this fruit,
Mrs. Nguyen shrieked, now trying to catch all the oranges in the air before they hit the ground.
They were on sale! Don't lie to us! You got them from the white grocery store,
Mrs. Pham yelled back in her face. But the spirit of Jackie Robinson taking over her right arm, she threw her final orange into the side of Mrs. Nguyen's face and watched as her oldest sister hurled herself into the side of the deli to try to avoid the impact. Soon came a flurry of Vietnamese slurs, accusations, oranges, and 10 years of pent-up sisterly rage and repression from all three women. But not one single apology was uttered. To the outside, it did look troublesome to see three sexagenarian Vietnamese women shout and throw perfectly good oranges at each other. The visiting elderly white bystanders from Arizona watched with their mouths agape. They had come to try one of the oldest Vietnamese delis in Orange County, based on a best-of foodie list, and they turned their noses up at the Zung sisters as they clutched their fresh banh mi close to their chest. They all had a similar thought that President Ford should never have granted asylum to the South Vietnamese, and this was a prime example of why. But the actual Vietnamese residents who had sought refuge in the small village of Little Saigon, who had been aware of the decades-long Zung family drama, its origins stemming from before the war, knew better than to interrupt. In fact, they saw it as rather therapeutic, cathartic even, and a long time coming. It wasn't the Vietnamese way to talk rationally. Better to get it all out like this. The old men and women who dreamt about seeing the beaches of Da Nang again one day, watched from the sidelines, smoking their cigarettes and drinking their iced coffees with sweetened condensed milk. They watched the three sisters with the same bemusement as they watched episodes of Paris by Night. Their go-board game lay stagnant as they diverted their attention to the live action in front of them and began taking bets on which sister would emerge victorious. A majority gambled in favor of Mrs. Lum, based on her dodgy reputation alone, while some surprisingly picked Mrs. Pham. It was always the quiet ones you watch out for. For the next hour, they continued to sit on their little red plastic stools, unperturbed by the whole scene, as if everything were perfectly normal. Because they had seen worse things in their lifetime, caused by men whose skin was lighter than theirs. After being ushered away from Bang Mi Jiak Ali Bakery, Mrs. Nguyen, Mrs. Pham, and Mrs. Lum moved to a third location. They sat side by side, slightly out of breath, on a bench at the edge of Mile Square Park, far away from other humans. The women's clothes were stained with circles of lightly colored orange blobs. Their sun visors sat askew on their thick gray hair, and sunglasses were crooked on their noses, while a graveyard of fake Louis Vuitton handbags littered the ground. The Vietnamese deli workers had handed them towels to clean themselves up after their orange fight, then given them ice packs to nurse their wounds, and cups of cold jia to nurse their egos. They gently told the sisters to please find somewhere else to fight, before they called in their sons to escort them out of the complex.
First Sons were the only trusted law enforcement around Little Saigon. The sisters thanked them, apologized for their behavior, and began chewing on their complimentary sweet lychee jellies as they limped their way to the neighboring park. Despite kicking them out, the old deli workers were sympathetic to the Zung women, also having been privy to gossip about their family. It was a very known fact that everyone in Little Saigon knew the Zung women were cursed. The proof was in the family tree. Dai Ai, so many daughters, and not one son. Black crows had descended on bits of orange carcasses that the women picked off their clothes. Mrs. Pham watched the crows, wishing that they divert their focus to come pick at her instead. Maybe then death would come for her faster. "Someone in our family will die this year. The famous psychic in Kauai told me," Mrs. Nguyen revealed at last, breaking the silence, her mouth full of jelly. "She said that it's time for me to reach out and try to reconcile before it's too late." "Which psychic?" both Mrs. Pham and Mrs. Lum asked at the same time, curious about who their oldest sister saw, since they each had their own woman on other Hawaiian islands they frequented.
"Ling He,"
Mrs. Nguyen said solemnly, and closed her eyes dramatically, waiting for her sisters to react in shock. When her formal name didn't elicit the kind of urgency she was hoping for, she said,
"Auntie He?"
"Dai Ai," Mrs. Lum muttered. "Then someone will definitely die. Also, doesn't Auntie He charge more than the rest? She's quite expensive, isn't she?"
"I'm sorry. Did you think I'd go to some low-rent psychic, Quinn?"
Mrs. Nguyen scoffed.
"I'm just saying, you can see my woman, much cheaper, located near Waikiki."
Mrs. Lum raised her hands placatingly.
"And she'll give you a discount."
"Seems like a tourist trap for white people," Mrs. Nguyen muttered. Mrs. Pham could feel beads of sweat forming on her brow, and she considered telling her sisters about her recent health issues that had been ravaging her chest, but thought better of it. Why worry them when they have enough to worry about? She couldn't help but wonder if the person who would pass this year would be her.
"You don't think the person that will pass is..."
Mrs. Pham started, hoping to throw them off her scent.
"I told you to never say her name in my presence," Mrs. Nguyen said, gritting her teeth.
"But..." "My ay la mai,"
Mrs. Lum said, frustrated.
"It's been over 20 years since you've said her name. Just say her name! And 10 years since you've made your point and broken up this family. Yes, Kim Leung, you can say our half-sister's name. You don't think it's her that's going to pass, right?"
Mrs. Nguyen turned her nose up in the air.
"I don't consider her family, so no, it isn't her."
"Oh, God," Mrs. Lum whispered. "You don't think it's..."
All three of them had the same thought. They knew that it was finally time they contacted the matriarch of the family, their mother, Mrs. Li Mingzung. They had all managed to avoid their mother for a whole decade, and all the temples she frequented, her favorite restaurants, and even her favorite park where she did her Tai Chi exercise classes with her friend group. Now the time had come to kneel before her and beg for her forgiveness. Finally, for the first time all day, the sisters felt united on this front. They shared a commonality now. The enemy of their enemy is, well, a much bigger dragon.
What else did Auntie He say?"
Mrs. Pham asked. Mrs. Nguyen groaned, icing the sore spot where a rogue orange had pummeled the side of her face, following Mrs. Pham's perfect pitch. Mrs. Nguyen told her sisters all of Auntie He's predictions for the year. A pregnancy, a death, a wedding. She paused before telling them about the grandson, still afraid that it might not come to fruition. She talked about how Auntie He told her that this would be the year she could lose everything if she wasn't careful. As if a stone had been lifted off her, she began unleashing a waterfall of memories from the past 20 years to her two sisters. Everything about her fears about growing older, her daughter's romantic relationships, how strained their own relationships were, and how none of her daughters would call her back. The sisters were all able to relate to her fears, because none of their daughters would call them back either. And finally, she told them the final prediction that Auntie He had whispered in her ear right before she left Kauai.
"A boy?" Mrs. Pham gasped. "You think the curse is finally broken?"
"I don't know," Mrs. Nguyen whispered. "I don't want to get my hopes up."
Mrs. Lum rubbed her chin with her fingers, mulling over everything. She looked at Mai and leaned in.
"I know how to help the fortune come true. You mentioned you were worried about Tui ending up with a broke man and procreating with him. I know the perfect man to set her up with. He's healthy and wealthy and buys everything in cash. And you can bet his sperm is full of sons."
"I don't know, Quyen," Mrs. Nguyen said hesitantly. "Your line of work isn't exactly comforting to me."
"Just trust me," Mrs. Lum said confidently. "We're family, after all."
5. Tui Nguyen. Tui Nguyen was up at 6 a.m., drinking coffee on the bathroom floor. The bathroom had always been her safe space, a slice of privacy, especially after her tumultuous childhood, where she'd seek refuge on the cold tiles when everyone else was asleep at night. 6 little Vietnamese girls and 3 other families all crammed under one roof in that little house in Santa Ana. The bathroom was the only space where she was able to be herself and remember who she was. She would bring her books, reading about magical worlds and white princesses with their white prince charmings. She'd sit in the bathtub and try to learn French, because she was ashamed of speaking Vietnamese. And at night, she would paint her nails in the colors she wanted, and not the wild colors that her Auntie Lum would practice on her with for her nail salon business. There was a soft knock on the door, and Andy peeked in. She saw his thick black hair, an angular mess, and the most gigantic pair of thin, wire-framed glasses on his low-bridged nose. "Good morning. Sorry for interrupting. I know how much your morning bathroom ritual means to you, but your mother called. She needs you to do a favor for her today." Tui sighed and gestured for Andy to enter. "It's okay. My mother has an instinct for knowing when I'm in a peaceful mood. That's when she usually swoops in." Andy opened the door wider and brought Tui another cup of fresh coffee, and he slid down next to her on the ground. The sun had just cracked the horizon and was streaming through the skylight, littering the bathroom with specks of yellow dust. Tui loved mornings like this, in her little home in East Los Angeles, and she leaned her head over Andy's shoulder until she found the perfect spot, that little crevice above his collarbone that turned into a hammock for her head. Andy had always been so comforting to her, like a big bowl of fresh pho. Safe, warm, sweet, a golden retriever. That was Andy Jun.
"So, what's the errand of the day for the infamous Mrs. Nguyen?" Tui asked.
"She wants you to head to Pasadena to pick up a package for her temple." Tui groaned. "Again? The last time she made me go pick up something for her, it was a life-size golden statue of Buddha. I nearly threw out my back."
"You mean I nearly threw out my back?" Andy teased as he playfully pinched her nose.
"She also weirdly requested that you dress up. Or in her words, dung an mak nu ma lam."
Tui tried hard not to roll her eyes.
"Why is her go-to insult to always say I look like a ghost?" She buried her face deeper into his neck and let out a muffled scream. Andy didn't say anything. He just patiently waited for her to let it out, like he always did.
"All better?" he asked.
"Yes." Tui was now smiling, even though her face was still hidden. It was these little moments that bound them after 2 years together, reminding her of the comfort of stability, something she never experienced growing up. Because as the second oldest daughter of Mai Nguyen, she knew she was anything but normal. "Want some company going to Pasadena?" Andy asked. Twi paused, and her body stiffened. Though it was such a simple question in theory, she couldn't help but instinctively withdraw. Her mother's words from the past were like a branding iron, echoing through her, reminding her to never rely on a man. That in the end, marriage would ruin her, like it had ruined every woman in their family.
"No, I'll handle it," she said, pretending to laugh it off. "It's my fault for never escaping California like my sisters did. I'm my mother's personal secretary, bodyguard, and therapist. All in one. I just don't get any of the credit. Middle child problems, you know.
Come on, let me help. You've had a long work week."
He went in to pinch her nose again, but it was as if her evil alter ego took control of her motor functions, and she watched in horror as she slapped his hand away and slid across the bathroom floor from him. Her heart dropped when she saw his face contort in confusion, and she wondered why she just couldn't be normal.
"I said don't worry about it. I got it," she said, her voice instantly cold, but her eyes remained apologetic. She had ruined yet another nondescript morning and made a mental scratch in her head, tallying all the time she screwed up. Andy stared at her. His big brown eyes, full of endless questions, went from puzzlement to sadness.
"When are you ever going to let me in, Twi?" Twi pretended to look confused.
"What do you mean? You basically live here now."
He sighed. "I want to be there for you. You know I do. You just need to let me in. Please, I'm begging you. I want to be the perfect son-in-law one day, the perfect husband. But every time I mention or do anything that proves I'm ready for the next step, you freeze up and shut me out."
Twi broke off eye contact.
"Sorry, I'm not trying to shut down the conversation. You know I have a hard time talking about marriage, or the next step."
Andy didn't say anything. He just rubbed her knee in a circular pattern, over and over again, as if he were desperately making his final wish with a lamp. His eyes felt heavy on her. As they sat in silence, basking in the sun now fully streaming in through the windows, they both wondered if there was anything left in this relationship that they could salvage, especially when one wanted to move on to big moments and the other wanted to stay forever in the little moments.
"I'm not your father, you know," Andy said lowly. "We won't have a marriage like your parents. I won't treat you like that."
"I know.
Why do I have a feeling that you don't believe me?"
Twi closed her eyes, and flashbacks of the little house in Santa Ana ran through her mind. All six little girls were forced to huddle outside under the orange tree because all the adults were yelling inside in Vietnamese, telling each other how much they hated each other. Meanwhile, their neighbors to the right and left would yell in Spanish inside their own homes. Though Twi didn't speak Spanish, she knew that regret was universal and transcended language barriers. Regret was the only thing every family on that block had in common. Though they were the only Buddhists on a block full of, well, Catholics, they all shared the same pain of being trapped somewhere they weren't meant to be. Twi refused to be trapped like they had been. Under that tree, a young Twi had promised herself that things would be different next time around, with her generation. But she didn't say any of this to Andy. She never did, because she knew Andy wouldn't understand. Andy had grown up in a stable, educated Vietnamese family in a nice part of town. His parents weren't hoarders or in constant survival mode. His assimilation was easier than hers, and it brewed resentment in her. Twi did what she did best. Shut down. She bit her lip and hoped he would move on to another topic.
"Will you ever marry me one day?"
Andy asked, breaking the silence.
"Come on, Andy.
she protested softly. He paused, and Twee watched with reluctance as hope slowly returned to his big brown eyes. Her realism magnified as she felt his steadfast romanticism try to be big enough for the two of them, like it always did. She kept waiting for him to break up with her, waiting for him to finally realize that he deserved better. But Andy only looked more determined. "All I need is possibility." Twee didn't respond and turned her head, catching her reflection in the bathroom mirror. All she could see staring back at her was a young Twee under the orange tree in Santa Ana. As soon as Twee pulled into the parking lot of the long-running Vietnamese restaurant tucked away in a corner in Old Pasadena, she immediately knew what the package was. She slammed on the brakes, gripped the steering wheel, and loudly cursed her mother. The meditation audio she had been listening to suddenly lost all meaning. The mantras dissipated into gibberish compared to the backdrop of dealing with a Vietnamese mother who just couldn't ever let anything go. Because there was no package. There was never a package. Instead, a man with slicked back black hair, wearing sunglasses and a crisp white button-down, began waving at her. The sharp Southern California sun reflected off his gold Rolex and nearly blinded Twee. As she adjusted her eyes, she kicked herself for falling for her mother's trickery. Again. This was another one of her mother's setups. Twee still had residual PTSD from the last time her mother had tried setting her up. Her mother had made a match tail her from behind during one of her night jogs, trying to accidentally bump into her. When she tried explaining to her mother that she shouldn't have strange men follow her at night when she's jogging, her mother had put the blame on her, because exercising at night is bad for digestion. Twee never jogged again. Twee was about to turn the car around and not get out at all, when the man slowly lowered his sunglasses to reveal his full face. He sent her a smile that exposed his dimples, sharp jaw, and amber-brown eyes, and accentuated his golden skin tone. Twee went temporarily blind, punishing her for being a mere mortal woman. She did more than go blind. She forgot her social security number. Her brain shut off. Twee found herself suddenly parking the car, putting on the parking brake, as if once again, her evil alter ego had taken control of her body. She got out of the car and began walking toward him, her curiosity getting the better of her. Why was she so drawn to this man? He was like a shiny object on the sidewalk that she couldn't help but pick up. She knew the right thing to have done was to do a massive U-turn and head back home, straight into Andy's arms. They had plans to make banana bread and binge Korean dramas. Routine, stability, comfort, the opposite of her father in every way. These were things that she had gravitated toward her whole adult life. Andy represented all of this. She felt another scratch go on her tally wall of screw-ups as she heard her car lock go off behind her. "Twee, right? Twee Nguyen?" the man asked her as she approached him. "Recognized you from the photo that my mother sent me." Twee could barely nod her head, feeling unprepared for this moment and guilty for feeling unprepared for this moment. Standing there in yoga pants with a messy bun, looking like a cartoon caricature of a white Angelino female, she felt like a bridge troll in comparison to him. She quickly unfurled her bun and adjusted her gait. She knew her goopy, thick sunscreen wasn't properly applied on her face and recognized the irony that she probably really did look like a ghost. This was the one time she wished she had listened to her mother and gotten dressed up. She eyed him up and down, unsure if the man before her was real. He seemed almost too perfect. Out of all the men her mother had tried to set her up with throughout the years to break her and Andy up, this was her most bullish attempt. Her mother had removed the pin from an atomic bomb and played her final hand, all in the name of stopping Andy from potentially becoming her son-in-law one day. Her mother never approved of how little Andy made in comparison to Twee. This man in front of her signaled that her mother still didn't approve of Andy's salary. He was the opposite of Andy in every way. He possessed an ostentatious suaveness that could only stem from Asian men who grew up in Los Angeles. This was the type of Asian man Twi had avoided her whole life. They unnerved her, because they came equipped with a staggering kind of confidence that could only belong to the firstborn son of a wealthy, highly educated Asian family. Whereas Twi had spent her entire life being told that she was cursed for being born a girl. And she carried that stain like a scarlet A carved into her breastbone.
Oh, God, sorry about all of this. My mother, I mean.
Twi managed to finally croak out.
I assume your mother is within the Vietnamese meddling mother network from the same temple?
He laughed. You guessed correctly. Shall we go inside? Get some food? We can exchange war stories.
Look, we don't have to do this. I don't know what my mother told your mother, but I have a boyfriend,
Twi said, even though Andy's name escaped her at the moment.
Just tell your mother we met, that you're not interested, and we can both go on with our lives.
Hey, I also have a girlfriend, but my mother doesn't want me to marry her. Let's just say she's not exactly wifey material, he said, flashing a set of perfect teeth at her. This isn't the first setup she's forced me to go on, but she also knows when I lie, and I'm pretty sure she has someone that follows me around to make sure I actually go through with these setups.
Twi quickly turned around and scanned the parking lot, expecting a private investigator to pop out, or both their mothers in trench coats, watching from a car with binoculars.
I'm joking. No one is following me. Or you, I hope. He laughed at her as she turned back around, red-faced. My mother is not that crazy, though I wouldn't put it past her. By the way, I'm Daniel. He extended his hand, and Twi took it cautiously. Even his handshake was perfect. She could feel the calluses on his hands, and something awakened in her. His hand and hers didn't feel comforting or stable, and yet here she was, unable to move away from the flame.
I still have a boyfriend, you know.
And I still have a girlfriend, he said. But you just got here, and I just got here. We can still talk over some noodles. Might as well satisfy both our mothers and our stomachs. What do you say?
He flashed her a mysterious and mischievous smile, and the walls crumbled around her in a way they hadn't before around Andy.
You know they chastise us for not eating the dak bia, at least.
That smoothness. He might as well have been one of those Asian guys wearing a gold chain necklace and track pants, walking around Koreatown holding a bubble tea. It was that type of smoothness she actively avoided, because she never thought she could handle it, deserved it, or was the type of cool Asian girl to receive it. She mentally scratched another tally in her screw-up count as she found herself following him inside the restaurant, trying to hide a small smile. It was a strange sensation, being around someone who wasn't sensible. Twi didn't know what to make of it. Even the waitress had given them free dessert because she was so charmed by Daniel. Twi had never been the type of woman to ever get free anything, anywhere she went. Andy and she were the type to always wait for their turn in a queue, and they'd allow anyone to cut in front of them, even if that person didn't deserve to. As they walked out of the restaurant, a toothpick hung loosely from Daniel's lips. He put his sunglasses back on, and much to Twi's surprise, wrapped his arm over her lower waist and steered her toward his car.
Wanna head to the beach?
Twi's body immediately froze, and guilt washed over her. Go home to Andy, she was screaming inside her head. The more she repeated it, the less she became sentient.
Nobody in California actually goes to the beach, she said awkwardly. She felt 16 and insecure all over again.
He opened the passenger side door of an old convertible for her.
Well, it's a good thing we're not like everybody else then, isn't it? He said as he grinned at her, the toothpick still hanging on for dear life off his supple lips.
Twi still not in control of her own body, slowly crawled into the passenger seat.
"What about my car?"
she asked numbly. "Give me your keys," he replied. "I'll have someone come pick up the keys at the restaurant and drive it to your house for you."
How could anyone be so smooth?
Daniel laughed at her shocked expression and leaned over her until their faces were an inch apart. Twee closed her eyes and clenched her hands, afraid he was going to kiss her. But he simply reached over into her coat pocket and pulled out her keys.
"Don't worry. I won't do anything you're not ready for."
Twee didn't respond, and Daniel turned around to head inside the restaurant to drop the keys off. She didn't know what to say, her fists still tightly wound. Her fingernails dug into her palms, almost bloodying them. But she was too afraid to unwind them. She needed the pain as a distraction. Because the minute she uncurled her fist, she knew she wasn't ready to face anything real. At the end of the night, Daniel had pulled his car up toward a park bench on the hillside that overlooked Echo Park Lake. Twee's alter ego had fully taken over by now. She felt like a woman who belonged in the passenger seat of a convertible. The morning with Andy sitting next to her on the bathroom tile felt light years ago. Vignettes of their relationship had flashed through her as long-forgotten memories, far removed from the reality she was experiencing now. When Daniel opened up her door for her, he held out his hand, and she blushed as she accepted it. He held on as they walked around the lake.
"Favorite color?" he asked her.
"I prefer neutrals. I'm not adventurous enough for color."
"Coffee order?"
"Iced Americanos, but with tonic water."
"Whoa, you're bougie,"
says the guy with the Rolex.
"Okay. Favorite childhood memory?"
Twee was caught off guard. But for some reason, she felt it was easier to talk to Daniel than it was to open up to Andy. Maybe because Daniel was still a stranger, and he could possibly still remain a stranger forever. If she opened up to Andy, she knew that Andy would hug her and tell her to cry and let it all out, when that was the last thing she wanted to do. Andy always claimed that he understood what she was going through, but she never believed him. Because how could he possibly?
"I don't have one," she said quietly. "I had a shitty childhood. I prefer to lock those memories away, far in the back of my mind."
Daniel didn't respond right away. He squeezed her hand tighter.
"It's okay. I also didn't have the best. Probably why I turned out the way I did. We don't have to talk about it."
They kept walking, and Daniel stopped pelting her with questions. But Twee recognized the kind of silence coming from him, because she went into those shutdown modes too. She knew they had a similar childhood, and it made them abnormal to others. And she was oddly comforted by this.
"What happens now?"
Twee whispered.
"I think that's up to you, not me."
Long after the sun had disappeared behind the rolling desert hills, Daniel finally took her home and dropped her off around the corner, since she knew that Andy would be home. She paced up and down her dark driveway for another hour, too afraid to go in. The bathroom was no longer her safe space, because she couldn't face her reflection. She looked up and saw that their bedroom light was off. She already knew how she was going to find Andy. His glasses would sit askew on his face, his fantasy book would be folded on his chest, the humidifier would be running, and he'd have set out a glass of iced water for Twee on her side of the bed. Not too much ice, not too little. Just enough. Routine, stability, comfort. And Twee was about to blow it all up. Twee slept in for the first time in years. She woke up to 10 missed calls from her curious mother, wondering about her first meeting with Daniel. She immediately felt lonely when she saw her mother's missed calls, because she realized she had no one to go to about this. Her older sister, Priscilla, was in Seattle and had cut off the family last year, and her younger sister, Tao, was living in Saigon. What the hell was she doing? How could she do this to sweet, golden retriever Andy? Her Andy. Andy made his own kimchi from scratch. He learned how to read all 7 Harry Potter books in French. He had sex with his socks on. The kids he took care of as a social worker called him Mr. Andy. Andy couldn't even handle more than 1 cup of coffee. And even then, he had to be conservative about it, or else he'd have stomach issues all day. She felt nauseated. Daniel had texted her as soon as she got home, asking to meet again, saying that he couldn't stop thinking about her, their conversation, and their impromptu day at the beach and late-night walk around Echo Park Lake. He then sent another text soon after, saying that maybe, just maybe, for the first time in his life, his mother had gotten it right, that there could be something here. And he said that he felt it coming from her too. When she didn't respond for a while, he sent a follow-up text saying it was okay if they started slow. There was no point in rushing anything. They could be friends. Friends. That wasn't cheating. Twi justified it in her mind, but she hadn't responded back yet. Twi ran to the bathroom, turned on the water to the highest pressure point until it sounded like Niagara Falls, and slinked down onto the cold, stony tiles. Her safe space was now a place of guilt. She was hiding. Andy was in the kitchen, laughing along to a podcast, making her favorite gluten-free waffles. Twi took out her phone. Her eyes kept running over Daniel's texts, poring over every curve of his messages, imagining his hands around her, going over every curve on her body. She couldn't stop herself. Even when she threw her phone across the room, she ran after it like an addict. She picked it up and immediately responded, "When and where?" Twi had become her worst nightmare. She had grown up and become like her father, a cheat, liar, and gambler. The thing is, she knew she turned out worse than her father, because her father, despite his flaws, did it all in the name of family and survival. Twi had no tangible excuse for what she was about to do. All she knew was that she had always been good at running. 6. Mrs. Li Mingzhong. Mrs. Li Mingzhong really only had one regret in her lifetime. She had forgiven herself for the rest of her mistakes, because she knew she was not like her mother, or her mother's mother, or her mother's mother's mother. She accepted the burden of having daughters. Vietnamese women lived with enough grief, and she would not allow this narrative to dictate her daughters' lives. After the loss of her first husband, Mrs. Zung thought she knew pain. But it wasn't until she lost her first daughter, Gim, that she knew what it was like to want to die. Then, Gim had come back from the dead. 25 years ago, she showed up to their Santa Ana home with 2 daughters. Her appearance brought on a chasm within her family, like lightning striking a tree, rotting it from the inside out. Once the trunk had been hit, the branches had little to no chance of survival. It had been 10 years since Mrs. Zung had spoken to her daughters Mai, Ming, and Quyen. Mai had painted her as practically immoral, a devil of a mother who had kicked her and her 3 young children out of the house in Santa Ana 5 years after Kim's return. So her oldest was the first to cut ties. She couldn't let go of her resentment. Her second oldest, Ming, who often sought peace, decided to side with Mai, because she didn't want to see Mai be alone. Meanwhile, her youngest daughter, Quyen, who had originally sided with her, eventually went her own separate way, not picking any side, because she was tired of the fighting and wanted to see more of the world on her own terms. Now she was surprised to come outside today, and from her front porch, see Mai, Ming, and Quyen standing in the distance, bickering loudly with each other about who should ring the doorbell first. It had been too long since they all stood within the same vicinity of each other, and as she watched them argue, She realized that time had passed through them like the Santa Ana winds. Her three daughters' thick, black hair had gotten grayer with age, while hers had turned ghost white. Though they had all woken up a decade older, and lines had deepened around their eyes, they'd all lived a thousand lifetimes already. Because life had gone on, as it always does for survivors. Mrs. Zung envisioned her life flashing before her like a movie reel, recounting the greatest hits that lead to 10 years of silence, and reminding her of her one true regret. After surviving the refugee camps in Malaysia and landing in America, Mrs. Zung and her three daughters, Mai, Ming, and Quyen, settled in a small one-bedroom off Bolsa and Ward. It had a stench they couldn't get rid of, no matter how many times they put bleach on the carpet. They were living off blocks of government cheese and flipping food stamps for profit. And they were all terribly homesick. Homesick for the South China Sea, the old tamarind trees that lined their streets, the floating markets that ran along the Mekong Delta, where they would bargain for fresh fruit, and where they would lay on their backs and float as far as the river would take them. Young Mai, Ming, and Quyen were uncharacteristically hopeful and worked day and night, saving what money they could, flipping bangsao at the night market. On weekends, they would clean the homes of rich white Christians because they were the only ones who took pity on the newly settled Vietnamese, or the Viet Mayonnaise. Mrs. Zung squirreled away any bit of cash that came their way, and even took a few liberties with Little Saigon's underground gambling schemes to double, even triple, what she could, or how it was pitched to her, their version of the stock market. The night Mrs. Zung saw a cockroach crawl over Mai's arm when she was sleeping, she knew it was time. They didn't live like sewer rats back in their hometown of Ganta. This was insulting to their dignity. Mrs. Zung had been ready for this moment. She had been scraping an escape plan together to get her and her daughters out of their current living situation. Mrs. Zung hired a young man from the local temple to drive her around Orange County. Tai Nguyen was one of the few refugees who had been brave enough to get his driver's license and would borrow cars to drive anyone in Little Saigon around to help run errands for free. He was young and amiable enough and desperately needed the cash, which only meant he would be perfect to boss around. "Where to, go?" Tang asked her, after he helped her climb into the car. "Drive me around the neighborhoods where you can buy a house for less than $70,000 in cash and some gold bars."
"In Orange County?"
Tang asked incredulously, staring at her in the rearview mirror, as if she forgot where they were and who they were. Nothing more than two Vietnamese immigrants in a beat-up sedan with a mismatched colored hood. There was a difference between dreaming about owning land in this country and actually owning land. And that difference was based on the shape of their eyes.